Great to have your company on the Big Sports Breakfast Summer Edition this Tuesday, the 18th of January. The tennis last night, Ash Barty, she's got off her Australian Open campaign with a bang, a comfortable 6-love, 6-1 win over Lucia Cerenko. In just 54 minutes, she's on track to meet in the fourth round defending champion Naomi Osaka. So the Aussie world number one off to a great start. It's terrific to see Jamie Rogers and Adam Pengilly with me this morning. It's day two action today. So all in all, a pretty good start for the Aussies, even though Tanasi Kokkinakis went down yesterday. It's great to see Ash Barty off to a good start.
Yeah, Tanasi Kokkinakis no doubt will be disappointed bowing out in the first round of the Australian Open. But let's not forget he is coming in off the back of that win on his home court in Adelaide at the weekend, where it was his first ATP singles title. And Nick Kyrgios is on tonight up against world number 128, Liam Brody. And it was disappointing, I think, for James Duckworth, who went out and lost in five sets to Adrian Mannarino. And it was a hard battle, and he would be disappointed, I think, with that result.
Other Aussie winners yesterday, Alexander Vukic won in four sets. John Millman downed Feliciano Lopez in four sets. James Duckworth, unfortunately, he lost in five. Ila Tomjanovic lost also. So hopefully some good results for the Aussies today. There's plenty of them in action, 12 in action on day two. But it's the middle of January. I think it's okay to start talking rugby league, isn't it? You know we're actually less than a month away from the first trials being played, which kick off in Queensland on the 12th of February. Wynnum take on Brisbane, and then there's trials here in Sydney with a lot of the Sydney teams from Friday, February the 18th. So it's just exciting, isn't it, to know that we're not too far away from the start of the rugby league season.
There's always something happening in rugby league, Ryan, whether it's off-season transfers, players getting back into pre-season training, and those trials will come around really quickly, won't they? And then the season proper starts in March, so looking forward to what's going to be an enormous season, no doubt.
And boys, in the paper today, they were talking about Bulldogs legend Willie Mason returning to a coaching role, which he's already started there, but the Pathways transition coach, so he's going to help develop NRL prospects into elite footballers. So they had some good recruitments over the off-season, the Bulldogs. So you would expect to see them have a better season this year.
Yeah, speaking of recruits, we might talk about how the Cronulla Sharks are looking, because Craig Fitzgibbon, he's really gained a reputation as one of the brightest coaching prospects in the NRL, and there's a real belief that the Sharks could play finals football this year. They just missed out in 2021, but Craig and the crew at Cronulla have added some solid recruits in the off-season, which makes them look like a serious contender. And it's terrific to talk to Craig Fitzgibbon this morning. Good morning, Craig.
Good morning. How are we all?
Very, very well. You must have been happy how you've shopped in the off-season and some of the new recruits. How are things looking ahead of 2022?
Yeah, we're going well at this stage. I think it's a full honeymoon period, right? So everything's, I don't think there'd be a team in the NRL that's not full of optimism at this current point in time. Everyone's training hard, you're happy with your squad, and everything's going along fine at the moment. And the new players brought in have been, you know, they've done exactly what's expected of them so far, but the standards of the people and the players that are already there have been really, really pleasantly surprised with how they're going.
And Craig, how are you finding the role now as head coach?
Yeah, it's good, thank you. I think about footy all the time anyway, but when you're an assistant, you can be really selfish with your thoughts. I only had to think about the players and defence with my role at the Roosters. It's just a different volume of thoughts, and you might have a good plan in place, but there's some left field things that just keep popping up that you got to get used to. So it's been enjoyable just thinking differently and looking at things slightly different. But I'm enjoying it so far, thanks.
Craig, you've had some great recruits, obviously, with Cameron McInnes coming to the club, Nico Hines and Dale Finucane from Melbourne. What have you seen in the standards that those guys are bringing to training at the moment so far?
I think along with those guys, Matty Cavallo and Jaden Beryl as well, just standards of preparation, standards of how they carry themselves, standards of training. It's like the line of their best effort and their worst effort, it's minuscule, the difference. It's just standard setting and behaviours and just the way they carry themselves. It's really, it really holds you to account, even as a coach. Like, you feel like you've got to be really on guard to make sure, you know, those guys are thinking about the club, the team, the footy all the time, and you know, in Australia, you need to be sharp along with them. They've been, they're just good guys, like really good people. So it's a pleasure to work with them.
It's a relatively young looking forward pack that you've got, Craig. The experience of Dale Finucane, how important is that, and what type of role will he play, do you think?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of obviously fanfare, a lot of noise around the recruits. I'm really excited about the players that are already there. Like that's what Dale can do for a club and a team. He can just, you know, leadership. So many ways you can define leadership, but Dale's leadership he makes people inside and outside him better. And he does things off the ball and effort areas in the game which go unnoticed. And, you know, and what he does, because he does that stuff off the ball, those young forwards that we have should be looking at that going, okay, now I see the standard line. I see where I've got to get to. I see how hard I've got to push. And he's just a really good person. Like, he just, you know, the boys love him already. He's only been there temporarily and he's already sitting right in.
Mm. Craig, I reckon the Sharks developed a reputation for many, many years of being a really tough, gritty, defensive team, and it made them a regular top four team and took them all the way to that premiership in 2016. And probably the last couple of years, I mean, one of the most exciting teams to watch in attack, but they've also leaked a lot of points. How much of that has that been a focus for you so far in the preseason?
As we sit here now, I'd be proud of the club if we could look or resemble anything like that team that won in 2016. That'd be... I don't think that most coaches would love to be renowned for that grittiness and that competitiveness. And, yeah, I think we do have some attacking flair there as well. So, you know, on one hand, you want to be stingy and gritty and, you know, locked in and really hard to break down. On the other hand, you want to be free-spirited, throw the ball around and play some exciting footy. So we're trying to get that balance right. But, we can end up resembling anything like that team that won. That'd put us in the ballpark anyway.
And Craig, just while we're speaking about what will put you on the ballpark, obviously every team goes into the start of the season hoping to win the premiership. What's the goal for the Sharks this season? What will you deem a successful season?
I won't sign off on that at this stage. We're still, like you said, 4 to 6 weeks away from getting really serious. We're still just forcing and we're still just working on our identity. What do we want to represent as a club? How do we want to play? How do we want to defend? So a lot of work to do. Yeah, I'd be loath to throw a cap on where we could end up or where we might finish. I think it's probably an unnecessary pressure from me at this stage.
But Craig, I guess a great starting point for you is that your first trial game will be against the Penrith Panthers. What will be your approach to that? Obviously, sometimes in trials, it's about blooding young players, but it'd be nice to see, by and large, how the entire unit measures up against a quality unit like Penrith.
Yeah, we just started looking at that, actually. Whether we split up our trial, probably give a lot of young guys a go in the first trial and more senior experienced players in the second, etc. So we're just starting to form that. But whoever we do play in that first trial against Penrith, we want to hold a good account of ourselves. So whether it is young guys or old guys, I think you know the strength of the Penrith Academy and their depth in their club. So it'd be a really good test for us whoever we do put out there, and whether some guys have been short of some football in the last season or short of some football in the pre-season. There's sort of a few different balls in the air there where coming right down to the week before we'll be able to nut out a team there. But I think majority of those players will be a younger crew.
Craig, we've seen the COVID situation have a massive impact on society in general the last few weeks. It's been fairly prominent in a lot of different NRL clubs. How's the health of the squad, first and foremost? And secondly, do you support calls from coaches like Ricky Stewart and Justin Holbrook about trying to expand the rosters and allowing the NRL to have clubs pick as many players as possible for the inevitable outbreaks that's going to occur at some stage throughout the year?
Yeah, makes kind of sense, doesn't it? I mean, it's just a change. We have, like, regular meetings on where we're at and what could happen, and it just kind of keeps bending and shifting and rules changing, testing protocols, life protocols, Apollo protocols, public health protocols. It's kind of like this ever-changing dynamic. So it's really hard to get any kind of structure or systems around. Every club's trying to do their best to make sure we adhere to everything and still be able to flourish as a club. But you're right, it'll be a concern going forward if the quality of the competition declining because of, you know, we don't have the player depth, so it makes sense to get more players in, doesn't it? So I'm not, you know, there's also the possibility that players are fit and healthy and no one does catch it again if they've already had it or for the first time, but it's looking like it's quite contagious, so it might be hard to control throughout the season, I think.
Just a couple of players I wanted to ask you about before we let you go. Is one Wade Graham, your captain, you obviously missed the back end of last year after a couple of different head knocks. How's he tracking in his progress this preseason? And also Connor Tracy, I thought he's probably one of the most improved players in NRL last year. Have you got any thoughts about where you want to try and play him in 2022?
Yeah, I like, first of all, with Wade. Wade's fresh. He's had, obviously, the back end of last season off. He's just really excited. Like, he's really leading at the moment. He's put on a few kilos of good strength weight. He's lifted hard in that time off and got his strength back to where it needed to be. And we've worked very hard on his agility, just making sure his footwork and his timing. And, you know, he's at the moment, he's quite fit and healthy. So we're all excited for Wade, and Wade's excited as well. So we'll see that where that takes us. And with Connor, yeah, like, I think Connor and Ronnie Mulitalo was starting to get a little bit of combination work out there, interchanging between centre and wing, and Connors is one of those players who's got to be in the field, doesn't he? He's you know, he's had a wretched run as a younger player, had three knee reconstructions as a junior, and you know, sometimes trauma is a good barometer for success once they can overcome that. And based on last year, I'm really excited to just Connor will be out there somewhere, that's for sure.
Craig, we obviously knew you as a terrific player for, you know, the Roosters, St George, Illawarra. You played overseas for Hull as well. Representative football for New South Wales and Australia. You've been an assistant with the Roosters for a number of years and now you're into head coaching. The transition, what's been the transition and the challenges of the transition to a head coaching role that you now have at the Sharks, and what has surprised you the most?
I think because my father was a coach, like I've been sort of in and around, I'm 44 now, so probably from the age of 4 or 6, I've been in and around first grade sheds. So I just feel really comfortable in the footy environment, so I've got no qualms about being in around the guys or having to present and whatever, and I've been coaching for 10 years now, so feel really comfortable about all that stuff. I think the newest challenge that I had to face was when you're an assistant, you like I said, you're really selfish with your role. You make sure you're nailing a couple of key, really key areas that you can focus on. But now as the head coach, you got to think big picture. You got to kind of predict what might happen, and you got to govern. Like basically, just getting used to the governance and making sure we're well organized, our operating rhythm's strong. We're not looking like we're making it up on the spot. So just planning, just thinking differently and making sure we're very well organised. So, but that's been enjoyable. It's been different, but it's been enjoyable as well. And I've had a couple of coaches in the NRL when I did take the job reach out and say, you got to get ready for the stuff you're not ready for. Mm. And you can't. So that's just the left field stuff that pop up. But it's been, I've got to say, I can't, at the moment, the club and the team are everyone's given their absolute best at the moment, and I'd like to continue that throughout the season. But it's really enjoyable so far. Thanks.
Well, Craig, obviously you've got a terrific squad and a lot of expectation and hope around this Cronulla Sharks side, and you've been touted for many years as the coach to watch when you get the head role. So enjoy season 2022, and hopefully things will get off to a great start with the Cronulla Sharks. And thanks for joining us this morning.
No worries. Thanks for having me, guys. Thank you.
Craig Fitzgibbon joining us. Yeah, the Sharkies. I mean, how do you think they'll go? Nico Hines is a good signing, isn't he? Obviously, from the Melbourne Storm, you know, in a role where he'll be a pivotal playmaker alongside with Matt Moylan. They could have plenty of strike there, it would seem.
Yeah, he's a fantastic signing, Ryan, and he's very impressive, Craig, isn't he? Great speaker. Mm. When you look at the competition this year, you think probably not going to be a whole heap of change to the top eight. You imagine that almost the top six teams from last year probably finish the top six again. If it's going to be one team that might push into the top eight from that didn't make it last year, I think the Sharks are the ones. There's really savvy signings with Dale Fanouk and Nico Hines. Cameron McInnes, we didn't touch on there, who's come across from the Dragons, who obviously add a lot to that forward pack coming off an ACL. So I think the Sharks are real smokies to be the big improvers this year and pushing that top eight.
Yeah, so Ikavalu as well, I think, you know, obviously.
Yeah, he's big on culture, Craig. He's big on culture. Yeah. He's got those guys who are going to bring that right culture, Ryan. The Finucans, the Nico Hineses, Matt Ikavalu, who Craig would know very well from his time at the Roosters, are going to bring that culture across. So we'll wait and see how it plays out. But I think the Sharks have the ingredients of a really promising team going forward.
But it will have a really different feel without players like Josh Dugan, Sean Johnson, Chad Townsend, Aaron Woods. It'll feel like a really different Cronulla Sharks this year.
Yeah, got a nice blend, though, still of the experience and youth. When you look at guys like Finucane and Aiden Tolman still around the place, and got these young guys coming through the system. Blake Brayley will be better for another year, having another year under his belt, and having Cameron McInnes help him out playing number nine as well. So I think they'll go well this year. I really do. I think Craig Fitzgibbon, as we touched on, has had plenty of chances to take opportunities elsewhere to start up his head coaching career, and he's been very patient. He's bided his time. He's knocked a lot of opportunities back. He wanted to fulfill his contract at the Roosters, and he waited for the right opportunity. He said, "Yep, Cronulla's my team. They're the right opportunity, I think." So he would know what he's got to work with, and I think Sharks fans are entitled to be pretty excited.
Well, they'll be put to the test in their first hit out. In week two of the trials, they take on the Penrith Panthers, the Cronulla Sharks, at CommBank Stadium on February 20. We were talking earlier about the Aussie celebrations in Hobart after that fifth Ashes Test victory yesterday. It was terrific to see them celebrating with Aussie fans and even some England fans as well. I tell you what, Nathan Lyon wouldn't want to be celebrating too hard because they're suggesting that he will come back pretty shortly and play for the Sixers in the BBL.
Didn't he have the ultimate role in Hobart? He didn't bowl a single ball and batted number 11.
Extraordinary,
as well,
wasn't it?
And he hit three sixes, didn't
he? Yeah, he should hand back half his pay for the match, shouldn't he? But he had a good series. 16 wickets at 23.56 against England. So, look, I know he can be sometimes divisive, but I think all in all, he really punches above his weight, Nathan Lyon, when you consider the conditions that he has to bowl in a lot of the times here in Australia. All in all, he did pretty well. But the real test for our Aussie spinners is going to be when they play in the subcontinent, isn't it? On some of those decks where it really turns, obviously the spinners really come into play.
It's just these little variations, Ryan. That's the thing. And I was listening really intently to the commentary from Ricky Ponting throughout one of the test matches this series. I think it might have been Kevin Peterson put out a tweet, I think Jamie as well, criticising the English batsman, saying, "Get after Nathan Lyon, he's got no variations." And Ricky Ponting came back and said, "No, this guy is a top, top class spinner." Yep, his fourth innings record over the history of his career could have been a little bit better, but to take more than 400 test wickets from where he started, it's quite a remarkable achievement.
Now, just on cricket, there's a bit of a step forward for the women's game.
Yeah, this story caught my attention, Ryan, in the last 24 hours. Cricket Australia has confirmed that we'll finally have a DRS system in play for the Women's Ashes, which starts on Thursday night in Adelaide with the first of three T20 internationals. So I couldn't believe we hadn't had DRS in women's cricket before, Jamie, in the Ashes series.
Considering it's been part of the men's game for more than a decade. It's
what is it? Is a financial thing, perhaps, that it costs a lot of money to get it, and it's not in the budget, perhaps? I'm not sure.
Yeah, logistically, it's hard to get to a lot of different venues, and probably the women don't play as a lot of those major stadiums that the men play at. I think they're trying to have it for that India series in September, October last year, but when the COVID outbreaks occurred, they had to move that series up to central Queensland. They didn't quite have the ability to get the facilities in place up there, so it's going to be interesting to see how the women use it. What Meg Lanning does. If she's going to be a successful captain with DRS or not. But it shows we're still a little way to go for the quality, don't we?
As you mentioned, their series kicks off against England from this Thursday. They play three T20s against England, then a one-off test, which is Thursday the 27th of January. So good luck to the Aussie women, and hopefully they can do a good job. Then they've got the one days, of course. They come up in February, so hopefully they can get some good results just like our Aussie men. Still to come in the next half hour, Roger Rashid is going to be talking day two of the Australian Open, where there's 12 Aussies in action, and hopefully find us a winner or two as well. Brad Davidson, before the top of the hour, will be with us. And then after 8 o'clock, Dan Smith, Sydney Thunder assistant coach, and DJ Velasevic from the Sydney Kings. It's the Big Sports Breakfast Summer Edition. Terrific to have your company this morning. Stay with us this hour. We're going to be talking to Roger Rashid about day one and the upcoming day two of the Australian Open there today. Some good results for Australia on day one. Alexander Vukic defeated Lloyd Harris in straight sets. John Millman defeated Feliciano Lopez in four sets. Tanasi Kokkinakis unfortunately lost, as did James Duckworth. They both went out. But Ash Barty, she was tremendous in winning in straight sets. 6-love, 6-1 over Lucia Cerenko. Ila Tomljanović bailed out, unfortunately. as well. Taking your calls this morning, 1353 53, send us an SMS as well, 0419 767 272. Plenty coming through this morning.
Got into some text messages here, Ryan. Morning, guys. Just tuning in. I'm not sure if you mentioned it. I was watching the Millman match last night, and there was no linesman or lineswoman. Is this all computerised now? Cheers, Al.
Yeah. So it's the Australian Open's the first tournament to actually introduce this technology, and it's a COVID protocol, I suppose, was the reasoning behind it.
Yeah, so they had a go at this electronic calling at a tournament in 2017 as sort of the next step in Hawkeye technology, and it kind of removes that players are less likely to vigorously want to discuss once you remove that human error out of any decision. So this is part of the COVID safe plan, and whether or not they decide to keep this technology moving forward will be interesting to see.
Well, I know there's been calls for it for a couple of years now. Novak Djokovic, incidentally, was one of the players that he was a big supporter of it. So
you wonder why after he got your squad to qualified for hitting a lineswoman.
So, but the new system should mean fewer challenges of line calls. So the system automatically shows close calls on the big screen on point ending shots. The default is 150 millimetres, which is about 6 inches, or less for a rally shot of about 50 millimetres, which is 2 inches, or less for a service. So it can potentially slow the game down a little bit more, but I think accuracy should be a little bit more, I guess, prevalent, which is good. But what's interesting with the technology that they're using, the pre-recorded voices that you'll hear, you know, like out or all of that sort of thing, they're all Australian frontline workers in the pandemic response. So they're firefighters, surf lifesavers and other emergency personnel that have done the voiceovers for
a
lot of
touch.
Those line decisions. Yeah, it's Jono's asked me to do that impersonation. Well, I'm sure they wouldn't sound like an English, would I say, out. I'm sure none of our Aussie frontline workers would sound like that. But it's a nice initiative nonetheless.
I like this text message coming in as well, Ryan. The best thing for English cricket is to try and find a way for Novak Djokovic to open the batting. It took the Aussies almost 2 weeks to get him out. No name on that one.
That is very good. Novak Djokovic arriving in Dubai overnight. And if you missed the update, it looks as though he might be in jeopardy of playing the French Open as well. So 2022, not off to a great start for Novak Djokovic. But the Australian Open is off to a great start for Ash Barty, winning in straight sets there last night. Let's talk day one and day two of the Australian Open. It's a good morning to Roger Rashid.
Morning, guys. How are you?
Hi, Roger. Look, it was probably expected a performance, a winning performance from Ash Barty, but she really didn't put a foot wrong, did she?
No, she didn't. And you could just, you know, look, there's obviously, you know, playing a qualifier, you're obviously going in there with a lot of confidence for opponent. There's a lot of tension around its nervous energy, and how do you respond to that? And look, she obviously found wanting at 6-love, 5-love, and I was glad she got a game, actually, because and the reason being, it sometimes can ruin your career. It can ruin someone's, you know, just they don't ever get over. I guess the, you know, you, as an athlete, you feel pretty, you know, you feel embarrassed, you feel, you know, feel sort of like you've let yourself down and let people down, and I've seen quite a few people lose on that scoreline 6-love, 6-love, and really struggle to find themselves for a period of time there, because they were, you know, it's different. You sit down on the tennis court there when you've got a big crowd and you're surrounded and there's nowhere out, you're really caged, and it's a hollow feeling. But on the other side, for Ash, you know, it was a perfect start for her. Just really calm on the tennis court. She has been for a long time now, and you know, it's a perfect way to open a major, because when you look at these major championships and you look at the favourites, you want to, yes, sometimes they might get caught into this real big dogfight early in the tournament, but it's about how economically they can actually get through the early rounds so they can give everything, as much as they've got in their fuel tank, to the back end of the tournament where the matches will definitely be heightened.
Roger, Australian wildcard Alex Vukic got his maiden Grand Slam main draw win after beating Lloyd Harris. What did you make of that match, and how do you think he'll go in round two?
Well, I told our listeners to jump on that one. I thought there was an opportunity there because Vucic's got, you know, he's a nice, strong-bodied lad who actually hits the ball with a lot of purpose. He's got some calm on the tennis court. He backs himself. There's no doubt about that. So he feels like he can belong in that environment. And Lloyd Harris is coming off. He's just not playing his most natural flamboyant tennis that he normally plays. So there's something going on in his camp. So I always thought it was an opportunity. And for Bucci to get that win in four sets and close it out in the fourth and not have to go into the fifth where experience would have turned up then and potentially Lloyd Harris might have come through. So that was a big tick near his name. He now plays Albot from Moldova and who's a qualifier. And again, and that was interesting. He got through that against Nishioka, who basically self-imploded on the tennis court. So I don't take a lot into that result. Albot Kemp, he's just a solid tennis player, but a solid tennis player means that Vucic has a real opportunity to get through that match as well. And so I'm looking forward to seeing what he does and if he can back it up and not get too caught up in, enjoy the first round win, but with a major, you do have a day between. So you can actually enjoy the win, come back and regroup and actually get involved in your second round encounter.
Just on the other Australian men yesterday, Rog, John Millman got past Feliciano Lopez in four sets. James Duckworth would be disappointed losing in five to Adrian Mannarino. I just want to touch on Tanasi Kokkinakis really quickly. In the full light of day, I know he'd be disappointed losing the first round of Australian Open, but when he sits down and reflects on the Australian summer, do you think he'll be quite content with what he's achieved in Adelaide and obviously resurrecting his career a little bit?
And any Australian player would take that. If you gave them that at the start of the Australian summer, you could have a title and your first title, you would accept that. But you'd cringe a little bit at losing first round at the Australian Open afterwards. Obviously had a flat moment. Wasn't able to get himself up. Just wasn't happening for him. And when it's not happening as it was the week before, that's the beauty of this sport, and that's why you've got to respect the week in, week out performers. It wasn't a good result. He wouldn't be happy with it. And so they're the sort of things you've got to address because, he's 25 years of age. So he would have expected more from himself. And that was a disappointing finish to the Australian summer. But yes, you take what's happened so far. It sets him up for it's a big picture vehicle for Tanasi.
Roger, Nick Kyrgios is on tonight. How do you see him going? He hasn't obviously had the best preparation coming into this, pulling out of both lead-in tournaments and suffering COVID. What do you think his chances are?
I think they're very good tonight. Liam Brody's qualified, won matches. When you're winning matches, you feel good about yourself. Nick hasn't played a match yet, so for the Australian summer, and hasn't played a lot of tennis full stop in tournament play. But he loves the court. John Cain Arena, so that'll be lively. There's no doubt about that. If you get a ticket in there, he makes it entertaining. So I expect Nick to get through that. Will there be a bit of up and down? There may be because he just hasn't had the volume of work as match play. But definitely expect him to get through that match. I'd be surprised if there was any other result, to be perfectly honest. And so we're all looking forward to that. Alexei Popperin's playing as well, young Australian. So he takes on Rindik Nesh, who made it all the way through to the Adelaide final last week, and who defeated Kokkinakis defeated. So yeah, Popperin can actually go to town and get some education. Hopefully, he's tapped on Tanasi Kokkinakis' shoulder and asked him a little bit about that match and how it unfolded. That's a good opportunity for him. And then we bounce over to look. I do want to mention Sam Stosur because. She plays today. This is her last Australian Open. It's quite interesting that it's been a bit under the radar. Obviously, the popularity is with the big names, big seeds. But Sam Stosur has been that person who's been a big name, a big seed, a Grand Slam champion, a finalist at the French as well. Won Grand Slams in doubles, and she's playing now in the last Australian Open today. So plays a wild card, 28-year-old, who's got a ranking of 172 in Anderson. From the US. So we hope she gets a win on the board. It would be fantastic because the Australian Open and the Australian summer generally has not been Sam Stosur's best results if you looked at them in a group. She's found it very hard to have good results here in Australia. But the greatest you got to win today.
Yeah, sure would. 12 Aussies in action and all. And we actually didn't even mention also Alex Demonor, who's on court tonight as well. He's a favourite. In fact, a lot of the Aussie men are favourite today.
You wouldn't sort of
see too many upsets, you would think, Roger. So we might get a few through.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I would look the Popper and Rindignesh. Rindignesh is a real quality player, so I just think that sits on a knife edge, and you'd probably need to go for the Frenchman because of what he did last week. I just think there's a bit of form there. So
yeah, he's
a
slight favourite, $1.75 over Popper, who's $2.05.
Yeah, Bolt plays Bikini from Spain. Again, I just feel like that's a, you know, Alex Bolt's is a, you know, got another wild card. I don't know how much longer you can give wildcards to 28, 29-year-olds. I really think we need to address the wildcard situation in Australian tennis because it needs to go to the youth versus... and you've got to stand on your own 2 feet, I think, at that time of your career. There's no doubt about that. Alex Bolt struggled to get inside the top 100 throughout his course of his career. And, except that if you get it, but I don't know if we need to be doing that with tennis in Australia. We need to look at that system, the way that operates. Yeah, that'll be on the knife's edge as well. Kyrgios, yes. Alex Demonor and Jordan Thompson versus Stevie Johnson. Again, it's a 50-50 match. I'll lean with Jordan purely because it's in Australia, but I just really think it's a bit of a 50-50 tennis match as well. Stevie Johnson's a very good hardcore player. He's not having the best career at the moment, his last couple of seasons, but he's a good hardcore player. Mm.
And over on the women's side, Storm Sanders is the outsider when she faces Aryna Sabalenka.
She will be. There's no doubt about that. But great experience. And if you're going to get Sabalenka at any time of her career, it's probably right now because she does have an issue on serve at the moment. She's just, you know, in Adelaide, she just served a bucket. I can't remember. They were in the 20s. There was a match where she served 20 double faults in a tennis match. So if you think about it, it's virtually a set of tennis she's handed to her opponent. So there's a great opportunity if they haven't sorted that out, and Storm Sanders can get some tension in the scoreline. I really do believe this is a must-watch match for those reasons. There's a lot of vulnerability on the Sabalenka side of the fence, so let's have a look at that one. I'm not sure what that's paying for the listeners, but it might be worth just having a little cheeky on that one.
Roger, not really the day one of the tournament so far, but I think we might have found the strangest match of the whole AO so far. I don't know if you saw this. It was off Broadway a little bit on court three, the match between Diana Yastremska and Madison Brengel yesterday. Now, Yastremska was a walkover quit at 5-love down in the third set, so Madison Brengel went through. But looking at the stats, Brengel only hit one winner for the entire match. Yastremska hit 31, and she lost the match. Have you ever seen anything like that in your time watching tennis?
What were the unforced errors? Did you see them?
Oh, I haven't seen unforced errors. Okay. It was just a clean...
She might have hit 31 winners and 70 unforced
errors.
Yes,
that's
right. So if it was lopsided in that way... but no, if you just looked at those, it's funny, isn't it? Tennis is a funny game because the numbers don't necessarily match the result. You can win a host... You know, you can win 15 more points than your opposition in a three-set match and you've lost. Mm. So it's not about how many... who wins the most points. It's when do you win them? But that's quite a staggering differential in winners on both sides of the court.
Yeah, 31-1. It was just remarkable.
It can often happen in the first round of a slam, though. You just get some really one-sided results.
Exactly. And if you've hit one winner only, it's not an exciting day on the court. Do you know what I mean? Whether it's a high-scoring football game or, you know, whatever it is, or a netball game, or whatever it is, we do like the wow, and the wow is winners and getting big scores. I think, you know, if that's entertaining, it means there's been a lot of activity. So when there's one unforced error, I mean, one winner, it's like, oh, I need to change something about my game.
Hey, Roger, very different looking Australian Open this year, very different looking Grand Slam with the technology as a result of COVID. Your thoughts on it, how it's working, and what do you think it means for the future?
Yeah, I like it. I guess you're talking about the line scoring and there's no umpires. Yeah, well, when I was on the board of our global tour, the ATP, and as I sat there and represented the players, we initiated that at what's called the end of the year tournament, which is it's called the Next Gen. It's all the youth play, the top eight best young players playing that tournament. So we initiated that, and it was an area where we were trialling a whole lot of different types of activation. That was one of them. It's a really, I like it. It looks clean on the court. You can't, it's taken away the disputes that take place because they, you know, they get a, they look at the technology. Some people do like the interaction of the umpire and then the crowd. And so there's the challenge and away you go. So there's no challenge now. You can actually just challenge if you, you know, if you think it's close, and the reality is you're going to get the same result. And the other thing that I have, so I do like that, yes. I think it's better for sponsors and everything off the, you know, off the backboard. So they do have a clean slate if you look at it from that perspective, from a tournament perspective. If you look at it, the other thing I do like, you may not have noticed, but take a little bit of notice, is that with the COVID ruling as well, the players have to put their towels on the side of the court in a little box. Mm. And so some players put two towels, so they one on the right-hand side, one on the left-hand side of each box. And so you'll notice that they're not going to their towel very often. So we in tennis, there was a habit that after every point, you know, that asked the ball person to run up and give them the towel and have a little wipe down, and some more than others. But now it's the game's just a bit cleaner and not as much going to the towel. And I do like that because it was a bit of a, it was a strange scenario where you'd always call for the ball person to come up and give you the towel and just wipe that last bit of sweat off and away you went. But that's not actually in play either. So there's a few interesting things that have come out of our world of COVID.
Yeah, it's interesting to keep an eye on for the next couple of weeks for sure and certain. Roger, enjoy the day's tennis and we'll speak to you again tomorrow.
Thanks very much. And the last thing I will say, that it was outstanding to just be talking tennis and watching tennis yesterday. So that scenario has gone and that wave's settled down. And I'll tell you what, around the venue, there was a lot of hype, a lot of excitement. And, you know, tennis was the winner yesterday, which was good.
It's great to hear, Roger. And we'll chat again tomorrow. Thanks for joining us this morning.
Have a good day.
Well, we're in summer, but gee, the smell of autumn isn't too far away, particularly when you consider the quality horse flesh that stepped out at the trials yesterday. Let's talk about it now with Brad Davidson, who joins us this morning. Good morning, Brad.
Good morning, guys. How are we?
It just had that feel, didn't it, that the autumn isn't too far away with some of the quality horses that we saw.
Yeah, definitely did, didn't it? We saw Nature Strip return and he did his thing. He took a little while to find the front and then just cruised away and won his heat in really good style. Ahead of Forbidden Love, who seemed to trial very nicely as well. And then we got to see Espiona and Animo in the other heat, and they both just trucked to the line beautifully as well. So Animo, particularly out wide, was doing his best work late in the piece in that trial, and Espiona was just kept under double wraps the entire trial. So pleasing trials by all three of those, and I suppose one's a superstar in his own right, and the other two are getting very, very close to that status, and Espiona obviously a bit further away, but like we spoke about yesterday, she's a superstar in the making.
Brad, James McDonald has been suspended for excessive whip use in the Magic Millions Maiden, so looks like he'll be out of Saturday's card.
Yeah, that's right, Jamie. I forgot to mention this yesterday. I thought we'd touch on it this morning. James will be missing this weekend. He just copped a week suspension there on Saturday for his ride on Devil's Throat in the Magic Millions Maiden, 17 whips before the 100. And the Racing Queensland stewards, they start their suspensions from 15 whips onwards. So he'll miss a week. And, yeah, that's if you don't see James McDonald in the race cards this week in Sydney, you'll know why.
Carrington Stakes this week. But I think this is a race that it's forever going to be remembered as the one that Tom Melbourne won all those years ago, if I'm correct. I'm sure he won this race under Blake Shin.
Well, it's easy to identify the races he won.
Yeah, there weren't too many of them. What did you make of the nomination so far for this week?
He did, didn't he? He won first up, I think it was. Yeah. Absolutely careered away from them. So it was a fantastic moment for Tom Melbourne supporters. A lot of seconds, obviously, as we know. But, yeah, looks good. 17 nominations overall at this stage. Some nice horses there. A couple to make their return as well. Lure Me In and No Compromise, who, of course, will kick off his preparation and no doubt get over a bit further. He's a bit of a stayer. But Lure Me In can be effective fresh, but looks to be some pretty informed horses outside of those. But there are a couple that are returning to the track this weekend.
Yeah, Purple Sector, one of them, a horse that has come back really, really well for John Thompson. And you think the sweet spot for this horse is 14 to 1600, so it should be primed as well.
It should be, yeah, and hopefully, I haven't had a good look at the weather forecast for later in the week, but obviously we had some warm weather to kick off, so he likes dry tracks, and he's definitely been knocking on the door at a couple of runs back. His first up run was outstanding when wide no cover, and then the other day. He was up on speed and just found a very informed horse, a bit too good. So he's flying and definitely knocking on the door and gets the opportunity in a stakes race like that for sure.
I know you're probably doing the form for the week. Is there anything that you've got your eye on that we can maybe have a long-range play at when the markets go up or perhaps even today?
Yeah, I'm going to have a good look at tomorrow's program, so I might be able to give you a bit more there. We were talking futures bets on the punters post-mortem there yesterday, so there are a few that were suggesting bits and pieces there. I think I suggested head of state in the Rosehill Guineas heading towards the autumn because, you know, he was a horse that in the spring champion. He started right alongside Profondo there and pulled up with cardiac arrhythmia. So, look, could have tried a touch better. I had a look at his recent trial, but I'll have a bit more of a think about the futures in the next couple of weeks. Might be able to give you a bit better guide there. I'd like to get my teeth stuck into them in the next few weeks when we see these trialers back. So hopefully we can give a bit of a futures all-in market guide in a couple of weeks' time.
All right. Well, we'll chat to you tomorrow and hopefully find a few winners for Newcastle and get a bit of a bank to do just that. Thanks for joining us this morning, Brad.
Thanks, guys. Cheers.